Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired on the 18th of January here in 2013. Jake and I get together most every Saturday morning to do this for you guys, but it's not the only audio produced here on the site each week. We have over 6 hours of audio produced here on ProWrestling.net each and every week. Jason Powell does a Raw review on Mondays. Will Pruitt does a TNA Impact review on Fridays. Will and Jake get together usually on Wednesdays to do the .NET countdown where they look at the best and the worst in professional wrestling. Jason Powell does his Q&A audio on Fridays, where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions alike. And Jason and I get together every Thursday for .NET Weekly. We call it our flagship audio show. We look at all the news of the week, often break news that's not made its way to the site yet. And there's a lot of that going on right now because it is WrestleMania season. We've got Hall of Fame announcements coming up, all kinds of things going on, and our members are going to get first look at all of the news that we break, whether it's on our audio shows or on the website. So if you want to get access to all that audio, be one of the people who gets to see the news first, you got to be a .NET member. Simply head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign-up link, and we will get you started for just $7.50 a month, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. And you'll get access to all 6+ hours of audio, the ad-free version of the site, any breaking news first for our members, and, of course, the .NET member blog section and the forum. It's the time of year, Jake. We are heading into WrestleMania season. The build is hot and heavy as we head into the Royal Rumble. We had a rock concert this past Monday, which was replayed on SmackDown. We'll talk about that. But on the SmackDown side of things, of course, the big news last week, new champion Alberto Del Rio defeating the Big Show in a last man standing match. We know based on Monday's Raw that Big Show was going to cash in his rematch clause, and he's going to do it at the Royal Rumble. So it will be Big Show versus Alberto Del Rio at the Royal Rumble. I know you'll do a preview article for that the weekend of the show, but I'm going to put you on the spot real quick and say, does either one of those men leave the Royal Rumble as the World Heavyweight Champion, or is this the month we're going to see the cash-in from Dolph Ziggler?
You know, I've been wrong so many times about the Money in the Bank stuff that I hesitate to even guess. But, you know, I would not be shocked, but I guess I wouldn't be shocked either way. I mean, I think Del Rio is doing a fine job with what's been handed to him as champion. You know, and it seems like, you know, to make this unexpected title move, you know, you think it would indicate that they were moving in a different direction and that, you know, Del Rio might be just a transitional champion to Ziggler, which would make sense to me. And, you know, I would not be shocked in the slightest if that happened at the pay-per-view. And that's kind of what I'm leaning towards, but, I mean, I've guessed wrong, like, literally 4 months in a row now, so I hesitate to even place a concrete bet on it.
Yeah, it's a little weird as we get into this time with someone still holding the briefcase, because I think from a logical standpoint, you're not going to have a character pass up the opportunity to cash in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania if the time comes. Why? It's always, you know, the grandest stage of them all, and winning the title at the grandest stage of them all is the bigger deal than just winning the title and all of those things. Why would you not have somebody cash in if they're still holding it this time of year at WrestleMania? And if they don't want him in the title match at Mania, they're going to have to jump through some hoops to get him away from there. But he's also the heel, so you don't expect the heel to announce when he's going to cash in. So you have to think the time is coming where it's going to cash, where he's going to cash in. The very first cash in, incidentally, by Edge, was at a Elimination Chamber when he beat John Cena after Cena had won the Elimination Chamber match. So it's possible we could have it there. It makes sense there because of the brutality of the match and all those sorts of things. I'm beginning to think Royal Rumble might be the time. I've been wrong a lot about this, like you have. I've called it a couple of times and been way off the mark on this, but and maybe this time's different because I don't feel like I'm putting a flag down and going, yes, it's going to happen, but I look at it, and when we see what happened in the opening segment here this week for SmackDown and the way they've moved Ziggler, I feel like they're transitioning him away from Cena and moving him into this feud, a little mini feud on the side with Del Rio. Whatever happens with Del Rio and Big Show plays out, I think we're starting to see everything line up and things happen. But he's got technically, I guess, until July, I think, is when Money in the Bank is. So he's technically got until then to cash in. They may go past WrestleMania. I think it'd be a little bit of a stretch to get there, but it's certainly possible. But outside of this, and we did get a Shield promo, which we'll talk about. Have you ever seen a show that had more drop off from one week to the other than SmackDown this week? Last week we had The Rock, we had the title change, we had a lot going on, and then this week, nothing. You know, we have a couple of tag matches that makes some sense, a six-man match that has some star power, the main event tag match that has some star power, and outside of that, it just seemed like a very random segment or a very random SmackDown with a lot of things thrown in that didn't serve a whole lot of purpose. Why, as we build to the Royal Rumble, are we getting Great Khali versus Tensai matches?
Yeah, and matches that are a minute and, like, 15 seconds on top of that. I mean, I don't know what the specific reason was for the cliff that the show seemed to go off this week, but it almost felt more like a return to formula, because we have been seeing SmackDown get kind of the short end of the creative stick when it comes to, you know, new material on the show. There are a lot of replays. There are a lot of short matches. There isn't generally a lot of feud advancement, except maybe the one or two feuds that, you know, originate on SmackDown. I mean, it doesn't seem like, you know, we've had Super Show on Raw forever now, and it doesn't seem like storylines are progressing from Raw to SmackDown and back. I mean, it seems like Raw gets all the star power, you know, with the combined rosters, and then SmackDown is just left with, one or two segments that are meaningful to a feud, and then, you know, filler. And it's kind of disappointing, because, you know, it is a two-hour show, and it is, you know, as they like to point out, the second longest running, you know, episodic television show right after Raw. So, you would think they would put more effort into it than they do, but a lot of times it feels like it's just scraps.
Yeah, it was just a strange week. It's so funny. Jason and I talked about this in .NET Weekly. So looking at the spoilers, it doesn't look like it's going to be a very entertaining show, or at least not entertaining might be the wrong word, but certainly not a newsworthy show when it wasn't. It wasn't a very exciting stuff show when that fit. And most of the matches, they did a good job of setting up the main event, but the six-man tag, as good as it was, it was weakly set up. I mean, just very poor. It's just these six people are in feuds, and, you know, it's a team and two teams and two singles, and we're going to put them together just because. But it was very little built for it. They did some stuff backstage to have some fun, but even that was built around the comedy aspect of Team Hell No. So it was really strange to go from such a big show to this. And before we break down the show, we'll start after this, but one more quick question. Do you think that hurts long-term viewership? Do you think that people who tuned in last week for The Rock and Del Rio and left that show excited? Because I thought last week's show was pretty good. But do you think that people who tuned into that, maybe they came back because of The Rock, because we know the ratings went up big time from like a 1.8 to a 2.1, 2.2, somewhere in that range. But do you think any of those people sat here watching this week going, what in the hell? I gave up my Friday night for this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky proposition. I mean, and it's going to be tough. I mean, nearly impossible to match, you know, the intensity of a show that has, you know, The Rock's return to SmackDown for the first time after 10 years, and then a major title change to close the show. I mean, not every show is going to be that momentous, and sure, you know, I think that's an unreasonable expectation, but you would think they could at least deliver us original content for 2 hours. I mean, it's not like this show is like, you know, something that they've just started doing and they're running out of, material. I mean, they've been running this show for well over 10 years, and at least recently, in the last year, you know, that I've been covering it, it seems like, Raw gets about 70% of the attention, and SmackDown is left with, maybe an hour worth of original material and a lot of replays and video packages, and, you know, it may have something to do with them taping other shows at the same time as SmackDown, but I mean, for the most part, it really does feel like this is a two-hour broadcast that really does not get a whole lot of creative focus, and that it's bizarre considering how successful the franchise has been over time.
Yeah, I just, to back up what you said, I want to be clear about what I said too. I don't, you know, obviously I don't expect every show to have the return of a major star for the first time in 10 years on the show and a title change. But this went from, you know, really, really impactful last week to this week, just kind of putting things together. I didn't expect six title changes and you know, all kinds of people to return, but they had good momentum there, and it's just strange to me to see them not even back off. I mean, that would be the thing you would expect, is to come off the pedal a little bit, like you said, because every show can't have that level of intensity. They didn't come off the pedal. They put in park. You know, they completely let the car roll to a coast and come to a virtual stop. It was just a strange episode. So many things that happened. You're just like, why are we doing this? Why are we seeing this? And then you mentioned the replays. I find it alarming a little bit, actually, that, you know, Wednesday night on Ion, on the main event, we got a replay of the pull apart of The Rock and Punk, that part of the end of Raw. But then on SmackDown, they take up almost the entire Rock concert. You know, as you put in your report, they cut out the first song because it sucked. But other than that, they pretty much have played the entire concert and Pull Apart, you know, a good long segment there, probably, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 minutes, maybe even 10 minutes of video where there's nothing going on as far as SmackDown's complete replay from Raw. And I still don't get that. I just do not believe that there are people who are watching SmackDown who are not watching Raw. When it was on network television, I would buy that argument. But they did less with their network television show to hype what happened on Raw than they did with their show, who was also on cable. And because it's all part of the NBC Universal company, I don't believe that there are many people, if any, out there that have USA that do not also have Sci-Fi. So I don't understand the process. I don't understand the faults that go behind replaying giant chunks of Raw, and not recapping, but replaying entire chunks of Raw for an audience that had to, I mean, certainly 90-95% of the people watching SmackDown had to have already seen that on Raw, even if they're watching it on delay through DVR or whatever else. It's outside the realm of possibility, in my opinion, that there are that many people watching SmackDown that haven't seen what happened on Raw. I think it's a huge waste of time. Do you agree?
Yeah, and you know, the weird thing is they spent, you know, I don't know, 7 minutes or something on the Rock concert. And then they went right into, you know, shortly after that, a Mick Foley video package and a recap of what happened on Monday with the Shield. So they, you know, the top of the second hour, which is normally, you know, the tops of the hours are usually what, you know, their best rated segments on the show. You know, that second top of the hour was basically relegated to stuff everybody had already seen earlier in the week. So it was really bizarre to me that they would give so much focus to segments that just had happened on Monday, and especially in a primetime slot that's usually reserved for you know, some type of match or you know, other attention grabbing type of situation.
Yeah, for me, the Hall of Fame video for Foley gets a pass to be replayed because it's the Hall of Fame. That makes sense to me. But yeah, everything else is just too much. But let's talk about the show. We'll start this thing off at the beginning. This was taped on the 15th of January in San Antonio, Texas, and we had a fiesta set up. We got, of course, the opening narration where the narrator talked about The Rock and Del Rio's championship win from last week. A mariachi band's in the ring, and they had a lady in there who was dressed in traditional, I guess, Mexican dress and was dancing. Ricardo Rodriguez was introduced, and he did the big introduction for Alberto Del Rio, who got a good pop from the crowd. I mean, that could have been piped in from WWE, but it looked like the crowd was into him. As weak as a babyface turn as he had, and as confusing as a babyface turn as he had from going back and forth between heel and baby for about 3 weeks in a row, where it was babyface heel killed Santa Claus and back to babyface again. You know, he's getting a pretty good reaction from the crowd. I was kind of impressed. He didn't talk very long. He came to the ring and said that he's welcome to Fiesta Del Rio. They were in San Antonio. It's time to party because the fat jackass Big Show was no longer the world heavyweight champion. That was all he said because Dolph Ziggler's music hit at that point. Ziggler comes out, of course, with AJ and Biggie Langston. AJ says, I'm going to assume that our invitations, you know, we love a party, and we're going to assume our invitations were lost in the mail. Del Rio asked him what they were doing there. Ziggler said he was there to tell him that he didn't hold a world title, that Del Rio didn't hold the world title. He actually held a big target on his head because he's got the briefcase. He said Del Rio knows better than anybody what that briefcase means. He said that when he cashes it in, Del Rio will have to say adios to his world championship. Del Rio got a big kick out of the adios thing and told them that they needed to leave. They acted like they were going to attack, but Big Show's music hit, and he came out to the ring wearing his hoodie up, just looking, you know, ill and irritated and unhappy to be there. He climbed into the ring, stood beside Ziggler and company, and just stared there. Ziggler made the comment, looks like you're outnumbered, and so Sheamus's music hit. Sheamus comes out. Of course, he got a great reaction from the crowd. He said he was there to celebrate Fiesta Del Rio. He apologized for some of the things he had done to, I guess he didn't really apologize. He just, he put over some of the things he had done while he and Del Rio were feuding when Del Rio was the heel. He even talked about stealing his car, which, you know, Del Rio kind of nodded about and acted like it wasn't a big deal. I mean, that was so recent. It was so funny to me that they went back to that. And Del Rio blew it off when it was, what, maybe 8 weeks ago? Something like that.
It was
just really crazy.
Yeah, it was like 12 weeks ago, but I think it was the last time they were in San Antonio, so I think that's why he made reference of it.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It wasn't San Antonio. So, yeah, it was just kind of funny how they were like, oh, you know, we did this, but nothing to see. It's all good now because he's a baby face. But he said he wanted to be the first one to congratulate Del Rio and on his epic victory over Big Show the previous week. And he said he had no doubt that Del Rio deserves to be world heavyweight champion. They shook hands and had the big moment. The crowd liked that a lot. He said Sheamus went on to say he was there to make sure that none of these idiots messed up his party. Del Rio says, look, it's my party. I don't want any violence. Sheamus asked him, really? And he goes, well, maybe just a little. And he took his coat off, dropped the belt. They squared off with the heels. The Booker T's music hit before anything could happen. He came out to the ring and told Big Show, AJ, the whole crew that they had to leave, but then the main event would be Sheamus and Del Rio versus Ziggler and Big Show. He finally got the heels out of there. The party started up again. Booker T went to leave. Del Rio stopped him, asked him to do a spin-a-rooney, which he did. And then Del Rio got Sheamus to dance with the lady to do the hat dance. The whole time JBL is on the headset screaming he can never go back to Ireland. And that was how we went to commercial break. It was cute. You know, we've already done, when Del Rio won his first championship, they did a Fiesta gimmick where he was the bad guy, went out there and roughed up Hornswoggle a little bit. So it was a nice departure from that. They're really beating the fact that he is Hispanic to death. We see them use these sorts of things all the time, but they are really going out of their way to say, hey guys, look, he's Hispanic and he's a champion. How cool is that? It's a little transparent, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not maybe as offended by it as I thought I would be. I mean, just looking at the mix of the crowd, I mean, probably half the people that they panned to in the crowd, you know, were Hispanic, being in San Antonio, and it's right on the border. So I can understand why they would go this route, because it did seem like a lot of people were into it, and a lot of people reacted well to it, and, you know, the mariachis were kind of fun, and the dancer was kind of fun, and you know, Sheamus attempting to do a Mexican hat dance, but coming up with something that I have never seen before. You know, they managed to work some fun stuff into that opening segment. It was different. I mean, it wasn't, you know, the same dry, you know, new champion promo that we seem to see every time somebody wins a title. They go out there and talk about how awesome they are, and it's some, you know, self-tribute promo that nobody gives a crap about. And this was a little bit different than that, at least, and they managed to make the main event. So I thought it was a pretty good opening segment. I wasn't bothered by getting hit over the head with the Hispanic stuff, just because, I mean, most of the time we're hit over the head with, you know, pro-America stuff on WWE broadcast too. So I guess I'm okay with the balance.
Yeah, I wasn't offended by it. It just seemed as overt. You know, it's reached a point to where, like, we get it. He's Hispanic. I understand. It was like, what else do you need to do? When you start pulling mariachi and hat dances out, it's like, this is how we're going to let everybody know that he's Hispanic. I think we kind of cleared that up. a while back. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't offensive. It was just kind of funny how they're really beating it to death. But as you said, a cute opening statement. It was kind of fun. They had some fun with it. It was something different from them we're used to seeing. So, I was a little bit ambivalent about it. I thought it was, I liked it more than I disliked it. And it wasn't really anything to dislike. But at the end, I don't know. I've gotten to the point a little bit where some of these opening segments where they do these big moments, or not big moments, but these kind of big setups, and they do these big parties, they, for me, they're kind of, they're a little bit passe, but different here, I guess. I guess it's Hispanic Heritage work for him here because it was something different than what we're used to seeing, at least with this. So, a cute opening segment, and it was effective to set up the main event. I'll certainly give them credit for that. What I won't give them credit for is what happened after the break. We get Antonio Cesaro defeating Kofi Kingston in 2 minutes and 50 seconds. I love the finish on this because Kofi jumps off the second rope or top rope to do like a flying head scissors. Cesaro catches him and then hits the neutralizer. I like the way they got into the finish. That was a very neat thing. But Kofi Kingston, again, back jobbing out to the mid-card stars in 3 minutes after holding that Intercontinental Championship and having what I think you and I both thought was a really good feud with Wade Barrett over that title. He's back to doing this again. Is this all we're ever going to see from Kofi Kingston, Jay?
Man, I hope not. I mean, I thought he was making a lot of progress there, and I thought he had some great matches with Barrett, and before that, he had great matches with The Miz on Main Event and Raw. I mean, I guess I don't understand, the motivation to keep him, kind of dwelling in the mid-card. I mean, if they think it's his character and they think he needs a different angle, then give him one. I mean, what are you waiting for? I guess I don't understand what the holdup is. He's never, really shown himself to be a dangerous liability in the ring. I mean, a couple of years ago, he had that one incident with Orton, but, for the most part, he's always been solid in the ring, and when they gave him, a little bit of personality and a little bit of, something to work with on the microphone, he's always been good in that respect, too. So, I don't know what the holdup is. I certainly hope he makes his way up to the main event eventually, but it's hard to say. It seems like they push him to the moon and then lose interest immediately. And it's these start and stop pushes that really damage somebody's long-term credibility.
Yeah, it's bad for Kofi right now. I don't get it at all. I didn't like the Wildcat being released thing that he had going on. The Wildcat's out. I've released the Wildcat or whatever silly ass gimmick it was he was trying to get over. That was dumb, but it was a dumb gimmick. That's fine. That's forgivable. You can fix that. I think he's a great wrestler. I think he's more than competent on the microphone. The kids seem to like him. Even if he's not going to be the most well-rounded babyface, there should be a better place for him, if for no other reason than the kids really are into Kofi Kingston. He's over with those kids. But moving on from this, it seems like this was mostly to set up the continued, what I assume to ultimately be the U.S. Championship match at Royal Rumble with Cesaro versus The Miz, because Miz was shown watching this backstage. They even showed the clip as Cesaro was making his entrance of what happened with he and Miz and Flair on Monday. And so, like I said, Miz was shown backstage watching on a monitor when the match was over. He went to walk away but bumped into Primo, Epico, and Rosa. They were laughing at him and making fun of him for being Ric Flair's new sidekick. They said Flair was a great wrestler, but Miz had catchphrases. Miz referred to Primo as Epico. He goes, "Look, Epico." He said, "I'm Primo." He goes, "Well, who's he?" And he goes, "I'm Epico." Doesn't matter. He said that he wanted to wrestle. He said he didn't care which one it was. And he turned to Rosa. He goes, "I'll let whatever it is." Yeah, he goes, "I'll tell you who will let decide you, whatever it is that you do." And he walked off and left her cussing there in Spanish. The line of all of this for me, and it was, it wasn't like a great line, but it's like, why do you say that? And there, in a nutshell, is WWE's problem. When they were talking to him, Miz said, "Oh, look at you. You talked for the first time in 2 years, and that's what you do is you use my reallys against him," because they did a gimmick where each of them said really at different times. So yes, that's right. That's the first time they've spoken in 2 years, and Miz buried them about that. And so now instantly any possible heat there could have been between whoever it is Miz wrestled and Miz is gone because Miz just buried them and had all the ability in the world to bury them because of the way they've been treated. The whole thing was just ridiculous. And I think more than anything, and you wrote this in your report, Miz is not working as a babyface. He might be getting some cheers, but he's not working because you still just want to punch him in the face.
Yeah, exactly. He just comes off as smarmy. I mean, there's not a whole lot likable about his character. I mean, unless you're the type of person who just enjoys watching people rip on somebody else, I mean, then maybe you might get a kick out of it. But I don't see any reason why, the fans should get behind him. And I'm not even sure the Ric Flair thing necessarily, is going to fix that. I mean, it seems like it's, they're trying to walk this thin line where he can still do his one-liners and then on the other hand, they want him to come off sincere. And I just don't think, those two things are jiving very well. And, I think it's something that they could fix, it doesn't seem like they have much commitment to do so. It seems like they really enjoy, letting The Miz take his digs at people. But in the end, I think it just completely undermines what they're trying to do with his character.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get what they're doing with Miz. I don't think it's working. He's, like I said, he's still not a guy you want to cheer for, and that's probably the most important thing that you can say about him. You might, and look, the digging on people has its place. I mean, there's certainly times when you want to see that, and Miz has been good at that. But when you put him up against guys like Primo and Epico, who have been, abused by the system and have been marginalized to the point of nothingness, and then you bring them up and they're supposed to be the sharp stick that's poking at Miz, and they're just a blunt nothingness, and he's the one poking back, it's a one-sided thing, and it doesn't look very good. You can get away with that sort of thing in the ring, enhancement talent sort of things, but when you try to put people on the mic, it falls apart very quickly. Speaking of falling apart very quickly, and thank God this was over quick, after commercial we had our second match of the night, Kali defeating Tensai in 1 minute and 15 seconds. It all came about from Hornswoggle getting beat up by Tensai last week. Kali won with a big chop, big surprise there. As Jason wrote in one of his reports not too long ago, with a chop chop here and a chop chop there, here a chop, there a chop, everywhere a chop chop, Kali won. That's pretty much so the story of this match as well, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it was like a minute and 15 seconds. I mean, it was literally a slap in the corner. Tensai got like 10 seconds of offense in the middle, and then the ref broke him up, and then like 30 seconds later, it was a chop, and it was over. I mean, it was like there was literally no point to this match. I mean, it kind of saddens me that Tensai has been reduced to this because I really enjoyed what, Matt Bloom was able to do as Giant Bernard in Japan. I mean, if you haven't seen some of that stuff, go out there and watch it on YouTube because a lot of it's available. A lot of the singles work, but especially the tag team work with Carl Anderson was really excellent. And now, he's back in the U.S. and they just can't seem to find a character or a place for him. And I think they really sentenced him to mediocrity with the Tensai character. And hopefully he gets a reboot, but I don't even know if that'll happen considering, how WWE is marching forward these days.
Yeah, it was the funniest thing about this match had to be, you could probably count the moves on, certainly on two hands. I don't think there were more than 10 moves, if you count each chop as a move. And the best part about it is that because it's wrestling and you have to sell the chop, or sell whatever you get, Kali chops Tensai, hits him with a big chop across the chest. Tensai, of course, has to walk away because he's hurt, and then Kali has to lumber over. So probably, with 75 seconds of this match, and easily 30, 35 seconds of it was Kali walking. to get back to this side. So, excitement time right there, folks. Check out that match if you get a chance. It won't take you but a minute and 15 seconds, fortunately. When we went backstage, Kane and Daniel Bryan were back there. They were discussing their therapy session for Monday. They made fun of Cody's mustache for a minute, and then Bryan said, "Some people just don't know when their facial hair gets ridiculous." Kane looked at him and kind of nodded and said, tell me about it. Brian, who I thought did a fantastic job of acting here, kind of looked back and forth for a minute and said, is there something you want to say to me? Is there something on your mind? Kane said no, and Brian shouted yes. They went back and forth shouting yes and no. When Randy Orton walked up, he asked him if they were interested in being second graders or if they were ready to inflict some pain on Rhodes Scholars and Wade Barrett. Kane said both and stormed off. Brian told Orton they were working through some anger issues, something that Orton knows about, and reminded him that they were the tag team champions. Orton cut him off and said that he would be a champion again when he won the Royal Rumble match. Brian cut him off and said that they would win tonight, and afterwards they would have a group hug. Orton said, I'm not much of a hugging person, and Brian's response was, not yet. Silly stuff. I don't know how much longer they're going to go with this. They've toned it back mostly, and knew they would have some follow-up after the Dr. Brady or whatever it is from
Dr.
Monday
Shelby.
Night. Yeah, Dr. Shelby. I'm sorry, not Brady. Dr. Shelby. Dr. Shelby from Monday Night. So, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, it's good in little clips, and this was okay, but I worry about how much more they're going to be able to get out of this act.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting to the point of diminishing returns, and perhaps they've already been there for a while, I guess, depending on how much you enjoyed it to begin with. But, I think Brian has really kind of embraced it, and he's doing his best to keep it going. I mean, he seems a lot more, calm, and he's actually improved his acting ability, I think, quite a bit. He does come off as sincere, even though he's acting completely ridiculous, which is... a testament to his growth as a performer. But it's really it's at the end of its rope. There isn't a whole lot of places to go from here. I'm hoping that we see Rhodes Scholars pick up the victory at the Royal Rumble, so Brian and Kane can move on to more interesting things, because I think they've basically reached about as far as they can in the tag division, and I think Team Rhodes Scholars would be good stewards of those belts and could do some interesting things with the babyface teams in the division.
Quick future booking question. Do you think that, once they drop the titles and move on, because they will at some point, I think it's Royal Rumble as well, but whether it's there or not, it's coming at some point. They're not going to be tag team champions forever. So when they drop the belt and they go their separate ways, A, do you think these two guys feud, and B, do you think they need to feud?
I think they feuded before they even got into being a team together, so I don't know if they necessarily need to. I mean, I think we'll probably see, one rematch with Rhodes Scholars after they, after they drop the belts, and hopefully they just part ways. I don't know, I don't know where they go with Kane, but I think Brian has a lot of, opportunity to move into something special for WrestleMania, but, I really hope they don't break them up and then expect them to have a WrestleMania match, because I just don't think it would be that interesting.
Yeah, Brian is very over. I'm interested to see what they can do with him after all this is said and done. I don't know. I don't think they feud, and I don't think they need to feud. I think their relationship is ridiculous enough they can just decide that they're done with each other and walk away, and people will accept it, as ridiculous as that normally sounds in a wrestling standpoint for a team to break up. I think this is one of the rare few teams that can get away with just walking away from each other without one turning on the other. But after commercial, we got the match and all that set up. Everybody makes singer ring entrances. Easy for me to say. Third match of the night, Randy Orton, Team Hell No, defeating Wade Barrett and Team Rhodes Scholars at 7 minutes and 44 seconds. Finish on this comes. It's a six-man tag match, and you know what happens. Everything breaks down. Everybody's tossing everybody from the ring. Orton hits the RKO on Damian Sandow, kind of a quick pop-up hit. Nice-looking moment there for the win. Everybody's happy. Everybody's clapping. And then comes the moment, the big group hug. Kane raises his arms almost like he's going to pop his pyro, but stands there. Orton's just looking at him, shaking his head a little bit. Kane jumps in for the hug, wraps his arms around Orton, and then Brian attacks from behind, wraps his arms around Orton as well, and is shaking his head up and down, and just a ridiculous moment. The crowd was hot for it, and for a one-moment-in-time thing, it was pretty cute. But Orton did a great job, I thought, of looking uncomfortable without looking ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, for a seven and a half minute match, I don't know how long it was, I don't remember, but I mean,
it was
maybe
really
3.5 minutes made it out of television. I mean, there was a long commercial break in the middle of that match. But yeah, everything broke down like it normally does, and Orton got the win, and I think the best thing you could say about the hug is that Brian looked way too happy that he got to hug Orton, and Orton looked, did a great job of looking completely disgusted, and I think that's what really kind of sold the moment. And the crowd was into it, so it was good for what it was. I mean, I kind of got a kick out of the hug just because Orton looked so ridiculous at the process. So it was good.
Yeah, I think if you have a chance to do it again, you do it the other way, because there was there's just something a little bit disturbing about the fact that Brian was hugging Orton from behind and was enjoying it way too much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, maybe really reverse Kane and Brian. Let Brian hug him from the front and be that excited. Hugging him from behind and that excited was just a little creepy.
It was funny, though.
After commercial, that's when we got the Rock replay. I've given my thoughts on this. Jason gave about 60 minutes of thought on this for .NET members in his audio review from Monday night. So I'll give you a shot here. What did you think of the Rock concert, and what did you think about the pull-apart at the end of it?
I spoke about it briefly yesterday with Will when we were doing the countdown. But, I have nowhere near 60 minutes to talk about this. But it was, it was all right for that place in the feud. I mean, I didn't expect them to, do too much as far as physical confrontation was concerned. They had a pretty hot promo together the week before that the crowd was, really into. And so, I thought this was a decent kind of a bridge between, that previous week where they had, the promo on Raw, and then they traded barbs on SmackDown with Punk giving that promo from the stadium and The Rock being in the arena. And then Monday, the concert was what it was. I mean, I don't know what you expect from a Rock concert, but I pretty much got what I expected. And, the pull apart at the end was a decent transition from where they were the week before. Hopefully they do a little bit more next week heading into the pay-per-view, but it was decent for that, that particular time period in the feud. I don't think they wanted to get them in the ring together and do too much physically together, and another long drawn-out promo probably wouldn't have worked that well either. So it was all right.
Yeah, I just real quick to recap kind of what I've said, which is it was the most exciting pull apart I've ever seen. I thought it was effective, but I've certainly seen better ones. But I think it put good heat on the match, and it was good to see them get physical. And we got the Rock concert, but then we got the serious Rock afterwards. To me, he didn't come across as sticky as he did the first night when he was interacting with Punk as he did this time. Yes, prior to Punk coming out, it was all Rock shtick, of course. But once Punk came out, I thought he was a little more serious, and I liked the balance a lot better. So, good stuff there. I didn't need to see it a second time, but, hey, what the hell. Miz makes his entrance after commercial, fourth match of the night. The Miz defeating Primo at 5 minutes, 31 seconds. He beat him with the figure four. Please, Jake, tell me that Miz is not going to be Little Nature Boy now. Jason asked me this on .NET Weekly. I told him that, he'd probably use the figure four a couple more times, but I think they'll get away from it. Do you think that's the case, or is he going to start wooing and shredding?
Oh, God, I hope not. I mean, I even thought, prior to, on Monday's Raw, when they had the segment with Flair and Miz, prior to Antonio Cesaro coming on, I thought that segment sucked. I mean, I really did. I mean, I did not think the Miz and Flair did all that well with their little ad-lib act they did on the Miz TV. I don't necessarily think there's much to be gained for the Miz by, completely copying Flair's moveset and mannerisms. People have seen that before, and they probably just want to keep seeing it from Flair because he's still around and he's still, obviously still getting part-time work from WWE. So I certainly hope it's over with soon. I mean, I could see him keeping the figure four, but I think they'll probably tone down the mannerisms soon. At least I hope they do.
What do you think the percent chance is that Ric Flair held Miz to the line, I'll buy your drinks tonight?
Oh, I'm sure he held him to it. The guy's broke. He's got, four ex-wives and huge debt. And yeah, I mean, I would assume that people are paying for Rick's drinks all the time.
Can't you see Miz at the bar going, it was a scripted line, Rick. And Rick going, ah, said it on national TV. You can't back out now.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. You know, Rick has not changed since he's been in his mid-20s. I don't expect it to happen anytime soon.
That's better than I wish I could find out for sure. We got backstage from there. Caitlin's talking with Layla. They had a brief exchange talking about shoes or something. When they start talking about shoes, I zoned out because that's my life. I get enough of that crap around here. I don't need TV for that with my four daughters and my wife. But anyway, Caitlin let Layla hold the belt, and Layla kind of, stared off into space. I'm thinking this is the beginning of a heel turn for her, is my guess. And then Teddy Long and Booker T walk up. They congratulate Caitlin. Booker T laughed at Teddy Long for the way he even treated him, and Teddy didn't appreciate that too much, told him to stop. But they pretty much, that was it. They just had a little moment with Caitlin congratulating her. She said she had a match and left to go to that. After commercial, we had that match, Caitlin defeating Oksana, 3 minutes and a second with a spear. Not the match we got Monday night. If you didn't see the match Monday night between Caitlin and Eve, that's worth going back and checking out, because that's one of the better Divas matches we've had in some time. I've been saying that about them, but it seems like every time they got together, they got a little bit better, and that was a really good Divas match on Monday. This, not so much, but Caitlin gets the win here, looks good. I don't know what else to say. I hate that Eve left, because she was the only girl with any friggin' character in WWE.
Yeah, that was kind of a disappointment, I guess. I understand she's probably moving on to different things in life, and that's perfectly understandable, and you wish her the best, but it is kind of a bummer just from a fan's perspective to lose the one diva in the division who seemed to have some personality and some charisma. But Caitlin, I think she's kind of growing into her new role, and I think they have other talented divas on the roster that they could exploit if they wanted to, and they also have several talented ones in NXT that seem to be ready to make their way up soon. So I don't, if they want to put some effort into it and actually create, a feud for Caitlin, they probably could do that. But it's hard to imagine them putting in the effort just based on past performance.
Yeah, I like Caitlin. I think she's got potential, certainly in the ring. But you look around, you've got Layla, who I think bumps around very well and looks good in the ring. You've got Natalya, who is very good in the ring, but seems to be only interested in Kali's thick fingers at this point. And that's really it. You got Alicia Fox, who has shown moments of brilliance and moments of nearly killing people in the ring. So that's really it. I mean, that's what you've got. There are other women, yes, but that's really all you've got that we've seen. Tamina looks like at times she can work. Other times I'm not so sure. We never see her for more than about 2 minutes, so it's hard to say. Oksana, kind of the same thing. I've seen her look not terrible at times. Other times it's really bad. The Divas division is in bad shape. I mean, it's been that way for some time, but it seems to be getting worse. But Phoenix gone now. You're right. They have some great talent down in NXT. They've got a great, 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 great trainer down there in Sarah Del Rey, who I'm sure has worked with the women in a lot of ways. I don't know if she's working with the men too, but certainly with the women, she could, teach them something. She's probably, in my opinion, she's the best female wrestler alive in the West. I know there are some Japanese women who could certainly give her a run for her money, but in the West, I think it's hands down Sarah Del Rey. She's there. They got something they can do with the women down there, but they are not doing it on the main roster right now. So hopefully we'll see some call-ups there soon. They certainly need the help in the Divas division. It's thin, if nothing else. The departure of Beth Phoenix, Kelly, and now Eve has really left that Divas roster thin, and too thin to carry on storylines. They need some new talent in there, and the good news is that the talent that they have to bring up can go. I don't know that we'll ever see a return of the Sable days or the Trish Stratus and Lita days, but they have talent that can go and been developmental, and I'm hoping that they can get there. We got Mick Foley's WWE Hall of Fame video at that point, a really nice video after commercial. We got the replay clip from Monday night where the Shield came out to attack Mick Foley, Sheamus, Orton, and Ryback making the save, and then that cuts to the pre-tape of the Shield. They said they would hold Foley accountable for all the broken bodies and dreams in the wake of his Hall of Fame career. They said that Sheamus would learn to respect, and that they were just getting started breaking more of the, or just getting started breaking the 206 bones in Orton's body. They said believe in the Shield and left it sitting there. I like these videos from them because they're different. They, as I've said before, they're very NWO-esque in their approach. Certainly different from how NWO did it, but the approach of having a different promo with camera tricks and that sort of thing is a nice touch. And so I like what they're doing, but I think they're starting to stall a little bit. I'm not one for pushing storylines faster than they should be, but we still don't know what's going on with these guys. They still make these really random, you know, protection things, and it's not clear to me, you know, how they pick guys out. That's the thing about heels, is that they always have perfect logic, even if you don't agree with it. I don't think we're getting much logic from them. They've laid the groundwork for it in, you know, the things they have said so far, but I still don't understand what's motivating them and if it's just them or if there's something above them. So I'm worried they're starting to stall a little bit. Am I off base here, or do you think that's the case as well?
No, you know, I wish we'd see, you know, a little bit more exposition from them on, you know, on their motivation or, you know, who or what they're answering to, if anything. I mean, they do talk about injustice, and, you know, I guess Foley is probably, you know, seems like somebody who's tailor-made for this, you know, a guy who has, you know, since the decline of his career as far as his in-ring career has acknowledged and attempted to kind of dissuade people from doing, you know, taking the career path he did with the hardcore, you know, that kind of wrestling lifestyle. And, you know, I think they're kind of tailor-made for that. You know, I think, you know, the Shield can exploit that. So if they're going to have Foley be involved with the Shield to give them, you know, a little bit of an edge, then I think that would work. You know, he'd be a good foil for them. And his career and subsequent, you know, repentance, I guess you could say, for some of, you know, the examples that he set, seems tailor-made for the whole injustice thing. But I wish they would spend more time, you know, dealing, you know, diving into that rather than quickly moving on from something that, you know, they could really sink their teeth into, to talking about Orton and Sheamus, who, you know, their logic there is a lot more flimsy. So, you know, we do need to see more, because I do think they risk, you know, really stalling out unless they get a really good storyline to bite into here.
Yeah, I don't. They're not dead. They're not stale. They're not anything like that. I'm not trying to make it, you know, there's no hyperbole here, but it does feel like they've stalled just a little bit. It's starting to kind of waver and not feel as fresh and as cool as it was. It's like the same thing over and over, just the beat downs, and then no real exposition on what it is. So we need a little bit more. And as I was watching this, and especially the way they've gone after Foley, I know you've seen it. Not everybody has, but I think it was last year at WrestleMania, they had an incident that was set up. It was recorded with like a cell phone camera and whatnot, and it was put on YouTube, and it just went away. But between Mick Foley and Dean Ambrose, where Dean Ambrose came up and called him out for the way he had done and whatnot, and I think that might have been the beginning of the Shield there. I don't know that. I'm not saying that they did that with the intent of starting the Shield. I'm saying they did that and then realized they had a story there and worked up into what we have as the Shield now from that. That's pure speculation on my part, but it makes sense. Do you remember the video I'm talking about?
Yeah, and you know, it went from a video to Ambrose sort of accosting Foley on Twitter, and you know, then Foley, whether it was legitimate anger or disgust, I'm not sure. You know, it could have been just another part of the work, but Foley basically just quit responding to him and put the kibosh on the whole thing when Ambrose started talking about his kids. So I think it ended there, and maybe they've worked that out in there, and it was what you're talking about, where they just put an end to it there and are, you know, kind of exhuming that now. But, yeah, I remember it being a video and then a Twitter feud, and then it was just kind of over once Foley got kind of angry about his kids being brought up.
And then after the video was over, we cut backstage where Randy Orton was watching it on a monitor. Sheamus walked up and said he thought it was funny how the Shield acts from different parts of the building. Orton said he didn't think they were funny at all, especially when they injured his shoulder, and they weren't laughing on Wednesday after what happened. Sheamus apologized for not being out there to help Orton. Orton said he didn't need his help. He said that he liked Sheamus because he had an answer for everything except the Royal Rumble. When the Royal Rumble came, he would not have an answer for him because he was going to win. He walked off, leaving Sheamus kind of shaking his head and looking a little bit frustrated that Orton was being antagonistic towards him. I don't know. I still think it's going to be those two and Ryback and a sixth man against the Shield, but I think the Shield wins because something happens with Orton and Sheamus and those two spin off. I used to think they were going to be at Mania, but I'm 99% sure now with a six-man match, and then that causes those two to break up or to have issues, and that will spin off the Orton-Sheamus feud that I feel like sitting out there. Are you with me on that, or do you still think it'll be those two with Manny, or do you have something else in mind?
No, I think that would actually be a very intriguing match for WrestleMania. It's something they could, you know, they could really build towards. They have a lot of history. You know, if they could find a way to, you know, to, because they all say Foley on Monday, and I think it would be nice if they could kind of intertwine those two. You know, I don't know if they want to necessarily have those three guys defending Foley's career or anything, but it would be, it'd be nice if they found a way to allow the Shield to pick up a little heat from Foley and then try to, you know, redirect that onto, you know, the other three guys. But I would much rather see that match than another Sheamus and Orton singles match, because I think we've seen about as much of that as I can handle.
Yeah, and they can build to that turn very well. I mean, you've got the Royal Rumble where you can have some things happen. You have the Elimination Chamber match, which I'm sure both guys will be in the following month, where you can continue to build friction between them and then work into that six-man match, have the turn by Orton, which allows the Shield to get the win without it being completely cheap, and it sets up continuing storylines. I just think it's a smart way to go at this point. After commercial, though, we were ready for our sixth match of the night, final match, Alberto Del Rio and Sheamus defeating Big Show and Dolph Ziggler by countout at 14 minutes and 28 seconds. Yes, by countout, not a great way to finish this, especially when you consider, Jake, the finishing move on this was a bucket of water to the face.
Yeah, I actually didn't think the match was that bad. I thought they, you know, they did a decent job throughout the match, and you know, and trading offense and you know, switching momentum back and forth. I mean, they seemed to be a pretty traditional WWE tag main event, and you know, that formula works, and they've gone back to that well a lot, and then, you know, it wasn't bad here, but the bucket of water leading to the count out was kind of puzzling. I guess the story they're attempting to tell is that you know, Del Rio is deliberately poking the bear, and you know, they're kind of setting him up to get mauled at the pay per view. But you know, it all depends on what direction they want to go with Ziggler, and you know, there's a lot of you know, potential drama there. So I think the way it's setting up is like we talked about earlier, seems to be setting up for Del Rio to get mauled and somebody to and Ziggler to cash in. So that's basically what this finish told me tonight, or last night, excuse me.
Yeah, not a bad match. I mean, it was like you said, it was kind of a standard, a little bit of paint by numbers, but not in a bad way. You know, it was a good picture. In other words, if you painted the numbers correctly, you got a good picture there. It was well put together, well wrestled. All four guys working very well right now. Certainly, Ziggler, we know what he can do. Big Show, you know, working out of his mind, always does well when he's got Sheamus in there with him. Del Rio, very confident in the ring. So, yeah, I mean, it was a well-wrestled match and worth sitting through. But the finish is just so strange. You get Sheamus hitting white noise on Big Show. Show rolls to the apron, stands up. Del Rio hits the enziguri, and the next thing you know, there's the Mexican bucket, and this time it does have water on it. He throws it right in Big Show's face and then throws the bucket at him, and Big Show just walks off, and that's how they finish. Sheamus and Del Rio standing tall in the ring. You know, I thought the announce team did all they could do with it. They tried to make it into, you know, being a big insult. And I thought they were pretty good at it. Josh Matthews and JBL did a better job, I think. You know, I think if you got your choice between Cole and King trying to get that over and Matthews and JBL trying to get that over, I think you picked the right crew to do that with. I think JBL you know, had the right level of indignation as the heel and going, how dare he do that? You know, he's just being disrespectful, and made it more about, you know, because it was just water. It was more about the intent behind it of just the disrespect to Big Show, and that's what made it such an insult. So I thought they did all that they could with it. They milked it as much as they could. I don't know that they got a lot of heat on the match at Royal Rumble for that, but I thought that they did everything they could with it and left the baby faces looking good at the end. We need to see Big Show. I mean, we've got one more week before Royal Rumble. I tried to make this Sunday Royal Rumble on .NET Weekly. My weeks are starting to run together already in 2013, but it's next week, and we've got one more week to build. I think even if Show is going to leave Del Rio out and Ziggler cash in, I think we need to see Big Show, regardless of what's going to happen, I think we need to see Big Show get something, a little bit of something on Del Rio this coming week, don't you?
Yeah, I would expect we'll probably see him knock him out or something. You know, Big Show will, they seem to be building towards a story where Big Show just finally, snaps and just mugs the guy. So I would assume we're going to see that in some capacity, whether it's on Raw or SmackDown next week. And I think sending the babyface champion into the pay-per-view, with some doubts as to whether or not he can even, overcome the very mad, giant bear of a man in the Big Show is a good angle to send into the pay-per-view. So I would fully expect we're going to see Big Show just kind of maul and maul next week.
Well, that is all we've got this week, folks, for the SmackDown, again, that aired on January the 18th, 2013. One more week into the Royal Rumble. Jake and I will be back next week with another SmackDown audio review. We'll give you a little preview of the Rumble. Jason Powell and I will be breaking down that show, giving all of our thoughts, previews, and predictions on Thursday's .NET Weekly. You want to hear it? Go right now. Sign up to become a .NET member, ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up link. Click there, and we will give you access to all the audio, the ad-free version of the site, the forum, the blog section. You'll be able to watch the show with us next Sunday night on the ad-free version without having to worry about those ads, of course. Jason Knott Powell and I will have double coverage, audio review of the Royal Rumble that night. That will also be members exclusive. So stop dragging your feet. Go right now. Become a .NET member, and we will get you guys going with all of that stuff. Lots of breaking news as we build the WrestleMania, but Jake and I will be back next week. We will have a small preview of the Rumble as well. Until then, thank you, everyone, for your continued support of the ProWrestling.net site. We really do appreciate you making us one of the top sites on the Internet for wrestling news. We'll see you guys back here next week. Until then, take care.